Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, a book that shares a clear look at universal energy healing, spiritual communication, and through stories and miracles, offers a way for us to awaken to our true human and divine potential. Today, I welcome author Rose Elliott, author of I Met a Monk, who hosted a Buddhist monk and 15 other novice meditators at her home for a meditation course, and she shares the peace she was able to derive from mindful meditation that became central to her ability to survive a tragic family situation. Hello, Rose, and thank you for joining us on Healing From Within.
Thank you. It's lovely to be with you.
Rose, as listeners of Healing From Within have come to expect and are aware, my guests and I share our experiences and lifetime quest to understand life, healing, and find the capacity for awakening to our deep inner intuitive nature in order to discover our multidimensional energy source, talents, interests, and goals, along with the tools necessary to improve family and work relationships and a clearer way for knowing wisdom, kindness, love, and compassion, and for allowing the release of this higher vibration into the world stream of evolution and expansion. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Rose will describe the monk's teachings and her own and her group's reactions to them, including short meditations, quick reviews, and practices designed for those struggling or new to the practices and techniques of meditation, which has been scientifically proven to be a means to relaxation, greater health, peace, and of course, self-discovery. Rose, I often ask my guests to think back to their childhood for a moment, just a moment, and try to remember a person, event, or place that may have influenced them to become aware of the talents and values that are important to you now and how you live and the work you do and the family you have and how you became the person you are today. It often starts in childhood that there are certain passions or interests that we can't push aside. So think back for a minute.
That's certainly very true of me, Cheryl. My whole spiritual unfoldment really began from the moment I was born, because I was born into a spiritual retreat center, a community. My family were all working in a spiritual capacity to teach meditation and help people to do exactly as you've been describing. So it was wonderful to be actually born into that environment.
Excellent. Yeah, you talk about your grandmother, Grace, and thanked her for her vision and courage, and your grandfather, and your aunt, and your cousins, who were more like brothers, and grew up at that retreat. But you weren't that interested at that point, were you?
I was interested when I was growing up. But the thing was, when you're born into something, and you're really told what you need to believe, you know, what
right.
is right, and so on, There came a point with me when I was in my mid to late 20s when I began to feel that I actually needed to stand aside from it so that I could discover for myself what really rang true for me without being told by other people what was the truth.
Right. Now, what were some of the beliefs that you were given as a child, and how did your husband, Robert, first suggest to invite this Buddhist monk to come into the house? What was his reason, and were your beliefs Buddhist when you were a child?
It was quite close to Buddhism. I believed very much in spirit, the spirit world, angels. I was brought up to believe in karma and being kind to other people and reincarnation and all those things. But I was confused, because when your grandmother is a medium and has a spirit guide speaking through them, this is absolute law for the whole family and never questioned. I'm not saying there was anything wrong with the teaching. It was beautiful, pure teaching, but both my husband and I needed to move away in order to really evaluate it and find out what totally rang true for ourselves.
Yes, you wanted a different perspective. Now,
yes, that's right.
Now, I'm a Reiki energy healer and a medium, but that only has developed over the last 20 years. Of course, I was always that way, but I thought everyone else was that way, and I was only following information coming into me because it was wise and helpful, and I thought just everybody else is also attuned to this kind of making good sense out of things. But my family is quite the opposite. They don't get it, so I don't talk about it unless I talk about it with people who are on this path. So
I certainly learned not to talk about anything like this at school when I was growing up. But we moved away, my husband and I, and I was perfectly happy actually with affirmations, angels, all the things that I'd actually brought with me from the retreat center, healing. Finding the light within myself and meditating. But he was seeking something else. He needed to go outside that, and he went to a Buddhist monastery. That's what he did, and he learnt from them to meditate the way they do it. We did much more imaging in the retreat center when I was growing up, but my husband Robert learnt the Buddhist approach, which is much more focused on mindfulness.
Yes.
Going into your own center of peace, not necessarily creating a lot of images or looking for images. And also he learned the very fundamental Buddhist teaching, which is so, so simple, the basic original teaching, which we'll come to in a minute. And he found it incredibly helpful. And because he found it so helpful, he asked me if he could invite a group of Buddhists and people who wanted to be Buddhist into our home and invite a monk to come and teach this teaching that he had found so helpful.
Well, tell us about the first meeting, the people who were there, and the Buddhist monk, what was his name? And then there are different types of monks. There's a Zen Buddhist, and
exactly.
Then there's a Tibetan Buddhist, and tell us something about that.
Okay. This is a Theravadan Buddhist monk. It's a Theravadan monastery. Theravada Buddhism is the most original, because when the Buddha gave his teaching, they couldn't write it down because they weren't writing in those days, but they repeated it over 200 or 300 years to generate from one generation to another. They repeated this simple teaching until it could be written down, and that's how we have it today in its very original form. So it's very pure teaching and very simple teaching. Now the monk who came was lovely. I was nervous because I had heard from my husband that you have to be quite careful. There's certain things you mustn't do. For instance, I couldn't rush up to him and shake his hand because you're not supposed to touch a monk, not a Theravada monk, especially a woman. So there were these things I knew, you know, there's a certain etiquette that you have to obey. But my husband was perfectly relaxed because he was used to this, and he talked to the monk, who was actually very down to earth and very lovely. We walked into the garden before the other people arrived, and he was looking at our plants. He said he used to be a gardener before he was a monk, and he said about one of the plants, "Oh my goodness, that needs a lot of cutting back, doesn't it?"
Yes.
He was absolutely lovely. And then this assorted group of people all arrived, all ages, from about, I think the youngest was about 18 or 19, right up to, well, my husband at that point was in his mid-70s, so we had the full range of ages. And another nice thing, we had a balanced group of men and women, which you don't often get in spiritual circles. I actually, just to cut across on something, is I don't, people say to me, "Are you a Buddhist?" And I say, "No, I'm not anything.
Yes.
I am a spiritual being having an experience in an earth body, basically. I love the Buddhist teaching, and I follow the Buddhist teaching, but I do not call myself by any religious name. I just don't do that."
No, I understand. Buddhism, as any spiritual journey, is for the refinement of the soul, which we know is the divine spark or aspect of universal source, which is connected to eternal energy and life. But it's still a unique, independent entity, the soul, and with a free will to discover life on its own terms. And that's just what you say. So I think you, like Rose, like so many thoughtful people, have veered away from the structure and restrictiveness of ancient religious dogma and systems for this very reason, because we want a personal connection to universal source that can bring unity and oneness and balance and peace. And it's unrealistic to believe. Yeah, it's unrealistic to believe God or Source expects His divine children to be limited.
Absolutely, and it's so beautiful because when we get into that space, we are all one. We are universal love and truth. We are. We are it. But we are also, as you say, individual sparks within the sun of life, as it were.
Well, that's the next question we're going to go to. So, what is the Buddha's essential teaching?
One of the things the monk said at the very beginning of the retreat, which really turned me on, what he said, Buddhism is so simple, the main points can be written on a postcard. And I thought, my goodness me, that's amazing. And it really made me interested. I thought, how wonderful. And there are just four things that are called, people will know this, I'm sure, the Four Noble Truths. And that is the fundamental teaching of the Buddha. And if you've got that, you've really got the key to everything. And the Four Noble Truths are, suffering is part of life, which we all know. When we live, you know, things change, we get attached to things, and they go. So we all suffer, and when we can accept that, and accept things as they are in this moment, we actually find peace because we're not fighting it. So that's the very first thing. And then there is a cause of suffering, and that is basically being attached to anything and wanting things to be different from how they are, or hating things, liking things too much, hating things, or, you know, wanting things to be different.
So therefore, not accepting, allowing, and surrendering to the natural flow of the universe and life, and trying to alternate it with the mind or ego and belief systems, rather than allow for acceptance. And I don't think suffering exists as much as we allow it. We make a choice to suffer because of these attachments or these desires. So we can end suffering by thinking correctly and applying some of the Buddhist philosophy, which says that you just accept everybody and everything as it is without judgment and with love and allow life to unfold. So therefore, you don't disturb yourself, you don't get yourself worked up into a fit, and you don't create that suffering for you. Nothing is permanent. We're changing every second, our body and the world around us, the energy around us. So we just have to know that life is good, and we're here to discover joy and compassion and kindness for ourselves first, and then for everybody else. And we're going to go to the first tool that Buddha gave to us, mindfulness, and how to use it in daily life alongside meditation. When people understand this, they will really understand the difference between the Buddhist way of being and other philosophies that approach it, but maybe this is a little easier to understand, and it is a good way for anyone to deal with life.
That's so true, Cheryl. So, you're absolutely speaking what I believe and what I've written in the book and the teaching that was given. It's so lovely to hear you saying it.
So tell us about mindfulness and meditation, and when we discover about these two words, how it's going to help our listeners to be more comfortable with themselves and life.
Right. Well, mindfulness is really a very simple concept. It's being aware of what is going on at this very moment now for us. We are aware of it, we notice it, and we don't judge it, comment on it, or criticize it. We just accept it exactly as it is. And the easiest way to practice mindfulness is to notice our breath as we take it in. We could do it now. You just notice your breath, feel the air as it goes into your nose, as it goes down into your lungs, and then as it comes out again. And if your mind is really occupied with that, you can't be worrying, you can't be noticing anything else, and you can find just a second or two of complete peace and acceptance.
Well, listening to your beautiful voice, I went into breathing before you said that.
Aww.
And I think some of our listeners probably did the same,
mm-hmm.
because we are being in this present moment. There is no past. There is no future. And as a Reiki master teacher, I was taught five tenets of life, much mm-hmm. like the Four Noble Laws. And the first one is be slow to worry. The second one is be slow to anger. You see, it doesn't say that you will never have an emotion or a moment of that.
Mm-hmm.
It just says to be alert and to be slow to it, so you don't have to go into that state that can bring you into suffering. And then, of course, to love yourself, love your work, love your life, accept whatever it is you're doing without judgment, and to be kind to your teachers and your family. And I always forget the fifth one. So what might that be?
Well, you said the one that I think too. Let's go back to, first of all, to mindfulness and loving kindness, because they are the two, what I call the two pillars of Buddhism, really. I mean, that is the essence of Buddhism as well. I mean, it's really what my grandmother would call the ancient wisdom. It is the truth, and it's so helpful. I mean, I'll tell you something funny. As you know, loving kindness is called metta. The Buddhists call that metta.
Mm-hmm.
And when the name of my book came to me, I Met a Monk, I didn't realize until I started writing it that when you listen to the title, I Met a Monk. You've got metta.
Yes!
They're very funny, the spirit
of the fabulous,
isn't it?
Yeah. But you know what? I want to go on to some distractions from mindfulness.
Yes.
Now, we do have to train ourselves to be in a state of higher consciousness or awareness, because the physical world around us does have many distractions. So what are some of the distractions from mindfulness that some of the people listening might want to start to think about so that they can start to stay in a more conscious state, an awakened state, more of the time? What might distract them? And how might we be aware of it physically?
Well, particularly our thoughts distract us from mindfulness. You know, when we start making ourselves quiet, the first thing we hear is the chatter of the mind going on and on and on and on and on, lots and lots and lots of thoughts. And what we need to do is to, I like to breathe, because when you breathe and you have a mindfulness breath, the thoughts automatically disappear for a short time. So bringing oneself back all the time to the breath and the peace of the breath and a kind of sense of being in your own core, in your center, because when you do that, Cheryl, it centers you, doesn't it? The breath
Yes.
centers you, and when you're centered in the center of your being, you are touching, sometimes you don't even know it, but you are actually touching your own strength and your own core spirit.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, and then your body is relaxed, you're not tense.
Absolutely. And it's the same with emotion. I mean, well, you know, you can be very upset with an emotion, but again, when you get into the mindfulness and you breathe, you immediately begin to find that peace.
I think you also start to do something else. Instead of the mind chatter, you start to have mantras or think of positive things or talk to people and express how beautiful the day is, the flowers, the place you're in. You start to, when you do express something, it's in a relaxed and very positive way, not harmful to anyone. So that takes away all the fearful thoughts, which 50% of the time on any given day, negative thoughts do float in to the mind, but we don't have to engage them or embrace
Absolutely.
Them. We just have to take the breath, as you say, go more to the peace or joy of the present moment, and allow it to pass, won't it pass?
You know, it changes and it passes. I sometimes think of the phrase, when I'm upset, which we all are, even though we practice these things, we all have our moments, don't we?
Yes.
But I think of the word, I can see peace instead of this.
Right.
It's a choice. We have the choice. Once we begin to notice our thoughts and notice our emotions, we can actually consciously find peace instead of those emotions and thoughts that are battering us. It's partly practice. You know, you get into the habit of beginning to look for peace and harmony.
You also could get into the habit of looking at the degree of what wanting and not wanting and how that fuels
yes.
your emotional charge and what it is that's really important to you, because needs are not the same as want or desires. We have,
absolutely.
As spiritual beings, we were born, each of us, with what we need to fulfill our destiny and to have the best life possible. And I think Buddhism teaches you to accept the impermanence of things, not to become too attached, to overthink it, and not to embrace suffering. And I think I want to read this from the book. You wrote, but the monk goes on to say a great truth and to give us the key to our success for accepting ourselves, others, and all changes in life. And you wrote, but it doesn't have to be that way. We can't change life, but we can change ourselves and the way we look at things. We can free ourselves from suffering. We have the power within us. It takes practice and resolution, but it can be done. And that is the key to personal success and peace and knowing, as we said, all is well. The moment moves along. And we are always all right, and we will be here and beyond here. So knowing these things does eliminate a lot of fear and take us out of a state that perhaps other people want us to be in, because maybe they're in that state, maybe they're victims of their circumstances, but we don't have to allow ourselves to go there. Now, tell us something. I found this very interesting. I find I do it, but I didn't know I was doing it. Tell us something about a walking meditation, which is another tool and technique for calming and refreshing yourself.
Oh, yes, that's beautiful. Well, the monks do various types of meditation. They do the normal seated one, but they do a standing one as well, which you can do when you're queuing, which is quite useful. But it's quite testing, the standing one. But the walking one is absolutely lovely, particularly for people who find it quite difficult to sit and meditate.
Right.
Basically, you just breathe and you gather yourself together. You steady yourself and stand quietly for a moment or two. And then you walk very purposefully, putting your foot down, noticing your movements, and breathing at the same time. And being mindful, really, of the air around you and what's going on in your mind, everything, just opening yourself to the moment. And as you do that, you will feel very, very centered, very earthed, and very peaceful. It's a very beautiful way of meditating.
Yes, I do it quite often. Mm. I didn't think of it as a walking meditation. I thought of it just as walking, because I sit usually for meditation and listen to music. But it is true. I do find myself having great peace when I do that. Mm. So I like
that's
that
lovely.
You described it. But Rose, I want to share something with you. I usually have coincidences with my guests of course, being energy beings, we are all connected, and life for each of us is a journey of our experiences and refining our souls. So I read in your book, you mentioned Khalil Gibran's poem, The Prophet, and it's a very important poem for me. And when I teach Reiki 1 workshop, I always include that poem in the material I give out. And may I read the poem you included in your book, because it's so important. All right. This is Khalil Gibran's poem, The Prophet. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward nor tarries with yesterday. So beautiful and so meaningful. I want to thank you, Rose Elliott, for a delightful look at a group experience with a Buddhist monk who introduces mindfulness, meditation, and the simple core tenets of Buddhist teaching, showing how we can successfully apply them to our everyday life for a healthier and more successful life journey. For more information and to purchase this book, go to imetamonk.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have had a delightful look at an experience which for Rose and her merry group of interested people opened their hearts and minds to an ancient Buddhist way of looking at life and its many challenges in search of ways to master their own emotions and develop an inner and physical life to experience greater happiness, joy, peace, and also a clearer view of suffering, which is a self-induced state when we fail to realize change is a necessary part of growth and development, and attachment to things, people, and events sets up the conditions for being unable to allow, accept, and surrender to the impermanence of all things in the physical realm. By mindfulness and meditation, it is possible to train our minds to accept the realities of a physically changing world and of changes to our own being. And with this clearer thinking, we are able to make choices which benefit us and others as we move through life as the hero of our own story and not the victim. Rose wrote, "So always go back to this and to mindfulness. Be in awareness. Find that place of no self. All is peace, clarity, love, and joy there. This is your true home. That is who you truly are. That is where you come from and to where you will return as well as any living thing, though in reality, we've never left it. We have just forgotten our true self. The more you get into this state of awareness, the clearer things become. Go there, be there, often, and you will find that apparent contradictions fade away into the wholeness of life. Rose and I would have you know that in a material world, sometimes the choices are not clear or perfect. But when you begin to look within your heart and see things from a spiritual viewpoint, you will begin to honor your own thoughts and remembrances of self, and life will become filled with a new level of kindness and respect for all. Find the path that leads you to this discovery." I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to read and listen to leaders of today's spiritual revolution, authors, and visionaries as they point the way to methods for self-improvement and the creation of a more humane society. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you for joining us today.